Now, I didn't want to introduce him until he was here to blush.
Oh, let me just say that this dear Swami, I've known for over 40 years. He began coming to the Hollywood Center with his beloved parents and really wonderful people, Devi Prasad and Avantika Nayak. They were very, those two were very serviceful to the center and to Swami Swahananda for many, many years and continue to be so. And both of their sons became monks of the Ramakrishna order. This is Swami Harinamananda, who is resident minister at the San Diego Vedanta Society and Monastery, and has great responsibilities there. His brother, Swami Chidekananda, is production editor for the publication Prabuddha Bharata. Many of you know that publication. It means Awakened India. And so the two of them have continued their service, pursued as he was known in those days, became very drawn to Swami Swahananda, as many of us were, and became more and more involved with the Swami and with the center and serviceful, until he finally joined the order at Swami Aseshananda's memorial service on Swami Vidyanananda's birthday at Swami Aseshananda's center in Portland. So in 1996, he joined the order, became a brahmachari. Then, after a time, he went to India, served in India, went to the training center and so on. And then in 2008, took sannyas. And now, since then, has continued to serve, as I said now, as resident minister of the San Diego Vedanta Society and Monastery. I don't have a dearer friend among the monastics. Perhaps I don't have a dearer friend at all. And as you'll see today, there's a great reason why Swami Harinamananda is in demand all around the country, because of his enthusiasm for spiritual life and his willingness to put great effort into researching things and presenting them to us in truly remarkable fashion. So, I hope I didn't turn you too pink there. But all of that is truly from the heart. And so Swami Harinamananda speaking to us about the Devi Mahatmyam, the title of his talk is Decoding the Chandi. He'll speak for an hour and a half, and then we'll go out into lunch. It's a catered lunch today, very blessedly, so we'll have a lovely meal. And if you can save your questions for the lunchtime, the Swami will be seated in such a way that he can speak to the whole crowd, because he'll need his hour and a half for this presentation.
Good morning. Why don't we start off with a chant? I think it's the chant, maybe you guys chant, Asatoma. So let's do it all together.
Om Asatoma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityor Ma Amritam Gamaya Avir avir maeti rutra yatte dakshinam mukham tenamam pahinityam tenamam pahinityam om shanti shanti shanti.
Lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness to light. Lead us from death to mortality. O Lord, guide us through and through, and ever protect us with thy loving presence. Om, peace, peace, peace to all beings everywhere. Good morning, everyone. It was because of the center's southern comfort, southern hospitality, and the motherly love that has drawn me here today, and especially our brother Shankara. I was just in North Carolina yesterday, and so I told Brother Shankara I want to come to the center because I feel such at home here, and especially in the love of his presence. I think this is what we'd call mother's place. You know, and in how many people have been to Jairambati in India, where the birthplace of the Holy Mother? So, and how many people have been to Kamarpukur? So, if you've ever gone to, that's the birthplace of Sri Ramakrishna. What I find, if you ever go to, in Ramakrishna's birthplace, everything is done in perfection. The arati is done with perfection. The puja is done with perfection. Ramakrishna said everything has a place and everything belongs in its place. If you go to Jairambati, during my time, what you would find is that the puja, the person who's leading the arati was a disciple, the direct disciple, a very old Swami. And when he would start the arati hymn, he would begin, and you would never know when to begin. Okay. And the pujari, who was doing the vespers, he would be waving his chamra, the fan. And as he's waving the fan, a truck might drive in front of the temple and stop. And as he's doing the arati, he'd tell the truck, hey, move, move, move. It was a place where I find it had such a mother's heart that all the misfits of our monastic order used to fall over there. Mother was a place that she accepted all without reservation. In Kamarpukur, it was very strict. You have to have discipline there. But I consider this mother's place. Not that you are misfits of the spiritual world, but there's a mother's heart here. So today, as Brother Shankar is talking about, we are going to dive into the Devi Mahatmyam, the glories of the Divine Mother, otherwise known as the Chandi. Before we begin, how many people are familiar with the Chandi? Okay, a few of you. Wonderful. Today, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you on a journey through the Chandi. What happened is within the past 2 months, or two and a half months, I've been possessed by the Chandi here. Do you know what the Chandi means? The Devi Mahatmya means the glories of the Divine Mother. It's also known as the Durga Saptashati, 700 verses. It is the equivalent of the Bhagavad Gita, which is 700 verses in the Shakta tradition. It's basically the Shakta's equivalent of the Bhagavad Gita. And it expresses the glories of the Divine Mother. And it's commonly referred to as the Chandi. Why the Chandi? Anybody? I like to do a little bit of interaction to keep you guys awake. Okay? What does Chandi mean? She who okay, so Chandi, so Chandi literally means ferocious. Okay? That which is a ferocious one. So today we're going to discover that Divine Mother has what's called not only a sweet side, Ambika, her motherly side, she also has this ferocious side, that which can conquer, that which can devour. That which is really scary. As Swami Swahananji, the senior Swami, used to say, do you want a namby-pamby mother protecting you? Or do you want a ferocious mother that has your back? So this is what we mean by Chandi. And there's chairs here.
Ferocious, but I mean, happy, loving with me, but ferocious to the others.
Yes, we'll discuss this, right. So he's saying ferocious to that which is not conducive to our spiritual life, ferocious to those that are negative things, but loving to that which is as a mother to a child. Okay, so good point. Okay, so let me just start in general because we have some people who don't know that the Chandi literally sometimes is a battle between good and evil, between the positive and the negative, between Asuras and Suras. Suras literally means God. Asuras means not God. Between the Devas, that which illumines us, and between the asuras, that which darkens us. This is, and all of this can either be thought of as outside forces in the cosmic realm or as inner forces within us. So today we're going to explore this. And the Divine Mother, in one sense, can be considered our true inner being, our inner divinity, our very self. So what you'll start to explore in the Chandi is, how many stories are there in the Chandi? There are three stories. These three stories are actually the threefold evolution of spiritual development. To me, when we start reading the Chandi, you're going to say, this has the whole gamut of spiritual life. And what we're going to talk about is the first story. We're going to start to decode, unlock the mysteries. Most people here chant the Chandi. And the reasons we chant it, if you had been with Swami Tathagatanuja Maharaj in New York, he used to chant the Chandi every day. And they say it awakens tremendous power within you. In fact, there are Swamis I've known, that Swami Sarvadevananda and other Swamis, when especially Indian women, I've seen them, who were battered, who were abused, they would tell them to read the Chandi for them to develop inner strength. It activates the different powers within us. Okay? So most people do it in a devotional way. But when we go to the stories, you'll find that a lot of us really don't understand what the stories mean. Especially a lot of us Indians. My father, who's a Bengali who chants the Chandi, also was telling me, as Bengalis, we really don't understand. So today, we're going to start to decode. And what we're going to start to find is the first story really talks about Tamas, our Tamasic self. Let me just go here a little bit. Tamas is that aspect of us when we are veiled with ignorance that covers, and if we feel like we're in darkness. We feel inactive and confused. The second story is going to relate to our Rajasic ego. Okay, that ego, when it's covered through, defined as activity, and it projects the ego into being restless, filled with desires, and always dissatisfied. The need for power. And the third story is actually going to be about our sattvic ego. That which illumines, in which we can find contentment, in which we can feel joyful and reflective. But it also has some pitfalls as well. Sometimes pride develops. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to go through some of the stories and we're going to uncover how the first chapter is talking about us, our Tamasic ego. And if we can get past that, we're going to get into the second story, how it unravels our Rajasic ego. And finally, if we can make it past our Rajasic side, we'll get to our Sattvic ego, which we'll find it's great to be Sattvic, but still there are obstacles. Obstacles to where? Obstacles to our ultimate realization. Okay? So you guys with me now? Are you ready to take this journey?
Yes.
All right. So, because there are a few of us that don't know the story, what I'll do is I'll have to tell the story. And so I'll try my best to just sometimes summarize, and then we're gonna analyze each one. Okay, so it starts off, let's see what I have here. Okay. Before I do this, actually, we're going to begin. I'm going to give you the cheat sheet on the Chandi. What do you call the cliff notes? All right? I'm just going to begin with the cliff notes itself. I'm going to give you, like, if you don't remember anything, if you remember this thing, and if you read the Chandi, you'll be all right. These notes will help you to understand and illumine what the Chandi is. Let me ask, I guess the way I should do this is, I have it there. All right, let me just use these notes here then. All right, the first question that you're going to come across in the Chandi, you guys don't look there, look at me. Okay, I will help unravel that to you. That's not meant to be there, but it's only meant for me. Okay, the first question that's going to come up in the Chandi is, what causes attachment? Right. We're going to find two people, Surat and Samadhi, who are, I'll describe them later. But you're going to find that
they have knowledge of what's causing them pain. Yet, they find themselves suffering. Why? What causes attachment? Why can't I let go? Each of us has dealt with this problem. The mind knows, but the heart can't let go. Why? They ask a sage. The answer is Mahamaya, in a simple word. She is deluding us. Then the next question that follows is, well, if she's deluding us, what are the ways she's deluding us? In the Chandi, simple. Three different ways. The first way is through ignorance. The first story. When our ego is covered with the ignorance, we develop what's called the Madhukaitabha personality. Okay. These asuric tendencies start to manifest within us. The second way she's deluding us is through power. Power, greed, the need for fame. When she does that, guess what? The Mahishasura aspect within us starts to manifest. I'll talk about these later. I'm just giving you the cheat sheet right now. And the third way she deludes us is through pride. And when she covers us with pride, guess what? The Shumba Nishumba aspect of our ego manifests. That sattvic pitfall that we'll find, the obstacles within sattva, start to manifest within us. Then, in the Chandi, well, if these things delude us, then how is she invoked? How do we invoke the Divine Mother to manifest her presence? How can we help her? How can we get her so that she can reveal herself and cut this delusion? The Chandi goes through worship, and they gave three specific ways. The first way is when you're in tamas, the first story, chant the Brahmastuti, the hymn that Brahma chants to the Divine Mother, to awaken Vishnu from that deluding aspect of the Divine Mother so that our Vishnu can fight. The second way is when you're in Rajas, awaken that divine Rajas within you, that Rajas where all your consciousness is fragmented. And then through that divine Rajas, everything becomes coalesced. And out of that emerges your divine mother, that Rajasic mother. Divine Rajas against your own individual Rajas. It's not going to be sattva against Rajas. It's the divine Rajas against your egotistical Rajas. Third, him. When you're in sattva, you chant the Aparajita Stuti. I've developed this pride. I'm so arrogant. Ya Devi, see the mother in all her various forms, in all her various manifestations. I bow down to you. I need your help manifest and awaken within me to kill the last impediment of sattva so I can be merged in your magnificent self. Then, if we chant these, how does she manifest? Well, in the first chapter, you'll find she manifests as Kali. To awaken our ego, she manifests as Kali to cut the delusion. In the second chapter, in our Rajasic self, to mature and ripen our ego, she manifests as Lakshmi, to give us abundance, but to mature through that. And in the last chapter, the third story, she manifests to kill the ego. It doesn't serve a purpose anymore in its function when merging with the infinite. Through what? Through Mother Saraswati. To reveal knowledge, to reveal who we truly are. Just by knowing this, now you have the essence of the Chandi. We can go home now, okay? All right, so this is the basic outline here. Okay, and let me just tell you, the Chandi has been interpreted in many ways. And when I did a lot of research. For the past 2.5 months, I was just immersed in one thought, maybe 3 months. This is what I was immersed in, day and night. This was what was pulling me in. And it was my own spiritual practice that was pulling. For some reason, she grabbed me, she was cutting my butt, and she was leading me. And what I found was that there are some books, but you have to go through many sources, and then ultimately you come to your own interpretation and understanding. So what I'm giving you is one understanding. But I'm going to be like a lawyer. I'm going to present the case to you, and then you decide. All right. So let's go ahead and just start our journey here. It begins with... Okay. So the first chapter, the first story... It starts off in a narration. The narration begins with Suratha, who's a king. And this king was the king of, had a large kingdom. And he was a righteous king. He was defeated by a smaller sized army. The defeated king, part of his portion, part of his empire was defeated, taken. And so then when he went back to his kingdom, he was weakened, and he further found that his ministers further robbed him of his treasures, and then took his own army. Embarrassed, he left the hermitage. He left his kingdom and arrived in a hermitage with a sage there in the dense forest. His mind was overcome by attachment to his palace. He was thinking, what's going to happen to my kingdom? What's going to happen to my people? What will even happen to my elephants? This is where his awareness was. While there, he saw a merchant. A merchant was named Samadhi. Samadhi was a person of good character and a very wealthy merchant. But because of greed, when he was asked, what are you doing here? He said, I have been cast out by my unworthy son and wife. They've stolen all my wealth. Cast out by my family, I have come to this forest grief-stricken. Dwelling here, I don't know anything about the welfare of my sons. My wife, are they leading good lives? How are they doing? Thereupon, the king asked, why is your mind affectionately attached to those covetous relatives who deprived you of your wealth? The merchant replied, you know, that very thought has occurred to me. Well, what can I do? I still hold a deep affection to them. How is it that I still love them? On what account? On account of them, I heave heavy sighs. So then both of them, in this bewildered state, end up going to the sage, whose name is Samadhi, whose name is Medha. And then they explain their situation to Medha. But the West, one question, why are we so miserable? Now, when you look at the meaning, literal meaning, Suratha means Sugudratha, chariot, good vehicle. Okay, one who has a good body. Right? Samadhi, I mean union of God, can also mean one who's one-pointed in concentration. Okay? And so when our attention, we need to have in spiritual life, we need to have a good body, we need to have a good mind. But that's not enough. Medha is that refined spiritual intelligence. When that awakens, all of a sudden your attention, which is on the body, your awareness, which is on the mind, that becomes tuned to something higher. What does it become tuned to? Well, what Medha starts to do is takes them to the Divine Mother. So, when our body and when our mind, the awareness, when the Medha wakes up, all of a sudden the higher intelligence redirects our awareness from outgoing into ingoing to our own divine self. And now let's see where Medha is going to take them. So, they after asking the question, the king, the question here is, why is it we are attached to the very things that cause us suffering? The king still worries about his kingdom. The merchant still worries about his family. Even though he was humiliated, deserted, and taken for all his money. Even though I understand what they've done to me, I have knowledge of that. I still can't let go. Why is that? This is the question that all of us sometimes should be asking. Why is it that even though the near and dear ones may treat us not so good in negative ways, but we still can't let them go? There's still some attachment. What causes that attachment? What is the mechanism behind attachment? Why is it my I is connected through my will to that particular object and I can't cut the will? Now, what does Medha say? Medha says, Nityaiva sa jagan murtihi taya sarvam idam tatam tatapi tat samutpattir bahuda shru yatam mama. In a simple answer, he says, it is Mahamaya. She is eternal, having the world as her form. She pervades all this. Yet, she incarnates in various ways to accomplish the purpose of her devas, of the devas. She is that which is Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya, Anugraha, Nigraha. She creates, she maintains all this, she dissolves all this, and through her deluding power, she deludes herself from us. She pervades everything, everything all around us. She is right here, right now. Why do we fail to see her? Sometimes we fail to see those that are most nearest and dearest to us, that are closest to us. What happens? We see through them. We don't see them. We take them for granted. This is what's happening with Mother. She is right here, near to us, but we don't see her, we see through her. And we see all the forms that she's manifesting, but we don't see her. And she also deludes us, she also has the power to reveal herself to us. Ramakrishna used to say she has two powers, avidya shakti, that which covers, that which conceals, Vidyashakti, knowledge, that which reveals. So, what we're going to explore now is her aspect of covering. How does she delude us? And then also, how does she reveal us? How does she reveal to us? What we're going to start to find as we explore the Chandi is that sometimes we think God is only the positive things of life. Okay? Anything that's good, God's grace. What the Chandi is going to show to us, she also comes in the form of these negative experiences. Do you think the asuras are not, are the asuras divine? What do the asuras, what we call the demonic, what's the basis for their life? I mean, are the substratum of how they exist, isn't that divine? Asuras are nothing but divinity covered in tamas. Devas are nothing but divinity covered in sattva. But ultimately, everything is divine. So she's going to start to reveal for even the negative experiences she comes at. And the positive experiences. Now we may ask, why does she come in the form of suffering? Why can't she come in the form of joy and happiness? Well, if you want to remain in the world with all the joys, she can come to you in that way. But for our own evolution, for our own growth, she has to come in the form of struggle. Because it's only because of struggle that we want to grow and develop. So, now, Medha starts to reveal the first story. And the story is very simple. The story is, Okay. This is not the story. Here's the story. During the period of cosmic dissolution,
When the universe was one vast stretch of causal ocean, Lord Vishnu reclined on the serpent Adisesha and was in a state of deep mystic sleep. Two terrible demons, Madhu and Kaitava, sprung into being from the wax of Vishnu's ears and sought to slay Brahma, the Lord of creation. Brahma, who was sitting in the lotus at Vishnu's navel, then extolled the great goddess, the Divine Mother, requesting her to withdraw from Vishnu so that he may awaken and slay the demons. The Devi is extolled by Brahma as the incomparable goddess. Thereupon, the Devi, who herself causes delusion, withdrew herself from every part of Vishnu's body. Released from the influence of Yoga Maya, Lord Vishnu awoke and saw those two evil demons, Madhu and Kaitava, endeavoring to devour Brahma. The Lord Vishnu fought with the two demons for 5,000 years, using his own arms as weapons. The two demons, arrogant with exceeding power, were then deluded by the goddess Mahamaya. They exclaimed to Vishnu, "Ask a boon of us." The two demons who were fighting thought they were so arrogant, they were deluded by Mahamaya. They said, "You, Vishnu, you fought a good fight. Ask a boon of us." Lord Vishnu said, "If you're satisfied with me, you must both be slain by me now." The two demons all of a sudden realized, "What is it I've done?" And then bewitched by Mahamaya. So then they looked around and they saw that the entire world was turned into water. And then they told Vishnu, "Slay us at the spot where the earth is not flooded with water." Saying so, Vishnu said, "Be it so." And he took them, Madhu and Kaitava, on his thighs and cut their heads with his discus. Now, it's a very simple story. But when you start to sort of analyze this, here we're talking about the cosmic delusion. Everything can seem from a micro or macro point of view here. Vishnu is put to sleep. This is pralaya, before the universe is starting to manifest. Okay, what happens is Madhu and Kaitava come out from Vishnu's ear. Who are Madhu and Kaitava? Madhu and Kaitava, Madhu, what does Madhu mean? Anybody?
Sweet.
Okay? What does Kaitava mean? Okay? Kaitava literally means insect. Okay? Here it means honeybee. You have honey and honeybee. What Madhu and Kaitava represent are these inertic forces within us. They're the tamasic aspect within us. Where are they born? They are born from the dirt of Vishnu's ear. What's the time situation here? This is pro-life. This is cosmic ignorance. They are born from ignorance. Now what happens? They come out. They represent Madhu, the sweetness of being in ignorance. Okay? That's Madhu. Kaitava, what does a bee do? It stings. Kaitava is the sting from moving away from that ignorance. It's the negative voice, bless you, within us that says, "You're not good enough to do this. You're not worthy." You know, the negative Nancy that comes into our head when we want to do something, when we want to do something new, when we think we want to go into some new adventure. And it pulls us back. These two are the pulling inertic forces that are always pulling us back. And what is Brahma? So when you're in the state of tamas, let's just first say, when you're in the state of tamas, what do you experience? What's the state of tamas like?
Inertia.
What's that?
Inertia.
Inertia, laziness,
darkness,
confusion. And what do you feel like doing when you're in tamas? Jealousy, hatred would be a little bit different, but what do you feel like doing when you're in a tamasic state?
Sleeping.
Okay, you don't want to what?
Hurting people,
yes. You see that also. Madhu and Kaitava, what they want to kill Brahma.
for no reason. They just want to kill Brahma. That's a tamasic act. So when you're, if you've ever known people who've had any type of addiction, or anybody who feels like, what are the forces that prevent you from saying, maybe telling a family member, I love you, or opening up to someone? It's that fear that prevents us. It's the fear that prevents us from opening up. What will they think of me? What will they say about me? That is Madhun Kaitaba. And so what happens is then, and you know the song, I'm an Indian descent, but I was born in America, so I have two cultures going with me. If you want to know what type of song describes the tamasic state, this is where the American side, I'm going to play one. It's a song by Pink Floyd. And this will just help us get into that tamasic state. Because what I'm talking about are three states of mind. And so I can actually spend 1 hour or one lecture on this state itself. But today we have to go from a tamasic state to a rajasic to a sattvic state. So it's a little difficult. But I'm going to get you in tamas right now, okay? How does tamas feel? It feels sleepy, feel inactive. It's what we call the numbing the pain, okay? This is a song by Pink Floyd. Is there anybody in there? And you're so inactive. Can you hear me? Is anyone? Just the music itself, it puts you in that hypnotic, tamasic, TV, fast food kind of inertic state, okay? That's how we deal with the problems we don't want to pursue, all right? So, what does Brahma represent? Brahma, if you look at this, out from Vishnu's navel, the Manipurna, below the Manipurna chakra, that's where all the Asura qualities are. Above the Manipura is where all the David qualities are. From the Manipura, a lotus is growing. The lotus represents the awakening of consciousness, the blooming of consciousness. From that blooming of consciousness, Brahma. Brahma is that which projects out the universe. Brahma for us is that creative force within us. It's the desire of awakening, the deep desire for change that's blooming within us. Okay? When that force wants to come out, when we want to change, when we've been in this tamasic state and we say, I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. Right? When we go from inertia, ultimately tamas ends in agitation. What happens? That inertic force is coming. We want to do something good. But then what happens? Madhu and Kaitaba are tamasic forces. Say, hey, wait a minute. You know, you're not good enough. This is not you. What is everybody going to think? And they try to bring us back down. Knowing that we don't have enough strength to defeat them, what do we end up doing? We end up going to someone that has greater strength. And this you'll find for people who have addictions. The first step in the 12 steps is we admit we're powerless over our addiction. I admit I'm powerless in this aspect of my life, which is inertic. I want to do something, but I can't because I'm embarrassed, I'm afraid. It's become unmanageable. The second step is we believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So what does Brahma do? Brahma sees that there's no hope and the Madhu and Kaitaba are out there to devour him, makes this chant. What is the chant? To get us out from tamas and to awaken rajas. He says this chant here. And if you know it, you can chant along. We'll chant a few lines. Dwam swaha, dwam swada, dwam hiva shatkara soratmika, shuddha dwam akshre nitye, ridat matratmika stita, ardha matra stita nitya, yanuscharya visheshataha, dwam evasa, dwam savritri, dwam deva janani para, twayaitat daryate vishvam, twayaitat srijyate jagat, twayaitat palyate devi, tumatsyante cha sarvada, vishishtau shrishti rupa twam, stiti rupa cha palane, tata samriti rupante, Jagatotsyan jagan maye. What is he saying? He is saying Brahma is looking at the elements around him, trying to invoke the Divine Mother, saying, you are Swaha, you're that offering to the gods. You're Swada, you're the offering to the ancestors. You are Swaratmika, you are the eternal music, the essence of all sound. You're Shuddhatvam, you are that pure sound. You're the Tridatmika, you're the essence of the vowels A-U-Ma. What is happening at this point? Remember, this is the beginning of from cosmic dissolution to the manifestation, first manifestation of the universe. At that time, what is happening? The knot of Brahma is opening up. The cause of the cosmogenesis is opening up. What is existing at the time? The vibration, the primal vibrations of the universe. The Om, the primal vibrations are going on there. What is Brahma trying to invoke? What is he seeing around him? He's experiencing these primal vibrations. That's all that exists. And he's telling the mother, Mother, you are everywhere. Let me invoke you in what is before me. So he invokes in what he's experiencing. The he says, You are the sandhya, the junction between the sounds. You're the adharmatra. You're the syllable, the bindu, after the om. He chants this prayer. And what happens? The Divine Mother manifests. And then at the end of this prayer, what does he ask Mother? He asks Mother, O Goddess, after every hymn comes the sankalpa, the resolution. What is it my heart wants? O Goddess, please subdue the mighty forces of Madhu and Kaitaba and awaken Vishnu so he can awaken and conquer these two great asuras. And what happens? Mother withdraws herself. The great Mahamaya withdraws herself from this yoga nidra, the delusion that she's putting on Vishnu. She withdraws herself, and then Vishnu fights Madhu and Kaitaba for 5,000 years. So what happens for us? If we pray to the Divine Mother, Mother, I can't, I'm in the midst of this terrible confusion, in these addictions, I don't have enough strength. Please awaken within me, give me the strength to battle these addictions, to battle this fear. Mother will withdraw herself and give us that strength. Okay? But it's not, it hasn't ended yet. The fight goes on for 5,000 years of equal. Ultimately, Vishnu is not winning. So what does Mother do? She then puts her deluding power and she deludes Madhu and Kaitava, the two asuras, into thinking that they are stronger than Vishnu, and into this type of prayer that you ask a boon that they can finally be killed. So after we've struggled greatly with our own turmoil and desires, when we're just about to give up, Mother will come back and then she will put a delusion on those, say, negative desires that within us, they feel satisfied. They're no longer haunting us. And we can finally let them go. This is the power of Mahamaya. That which deludes and that which awakens. Why do we call this the tamasic aspect of Mother? Because in this story, compared to the other stories, Mother takes a passive role. She doesn't do any fighting. She just simply withdraws herself from Vishnu and she simply deludes these two asuric forces within us. She doesn't take any role. That's why we call it the tamasic aspect. She removes the tamas within us. Okay. So, whenever you're in great difficulty and you're in that vibration of tamas, chant this prayer. Chant it in English, chant it in Sanskrit. Help awaken that aspect, awaken Mother within you to remove that tamas. What's our time situation? I don't have a clock here. Okay. What's it?
45.
Okay. So now let's go on to the second story. Okay. Now we're moving from tamas to Rajas. Okay? And in this story, this is a story that most of you are familiar with. And it's the in Durga Puja, we worship this aspect of the Divine Mother, Durga here. Right here. Okay. So the story goes, in ancient times, when Mahishasura was a buffalo demon, was lord of the demons, and Indra, king of the heavens, was lord of the gods. By the way, there's pictures going on, so you can look at the pictures here. There's a war between the gods and the demons that lasted a full 100 years. The great virile demons defeated the army of gods. After conquering the gods, Mahishasura took over the world and heavens. The defeated gods went to Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu and complained about the atrocities of the demons. Hearing this, Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma and the other gods became angry. The rays of their power coalesced, combined to form goddess Durga. The gods worshipped Ma Durga, and she roared and laughed, filling the sky with her sound. The gods exclaimed, "Victory unto you!" and praised her with devotion. Now the demon, Mahishasura, in anger exclaimed, "Ah, what is this?" He rushed towards that roar along with all his demons and beheld the goddess pervading the three worlds. Her feet touched the ground. Her crown scraped the sky. Mahishasura's armies and generals fought with the Divine Mother and eventually got slain. Seeing his army being destroyed, Mahishasura took the form of a buffalo and rushed to the mother's lion. But Durga stood firm, she the great goddess, and he, the maddened buffalo demon, came face to face, Mahishasura with nostrils flaring and the mother calm of gaze. Mahishasura struck the earth with his hooves and bellowed frightfully, "Who was this woman to stand in my way?" He advanced, and Durga, rousing her own rage, resolved to slay him. She threw her noose over his buffalo body and bound him tightly. Shaking convulsively, he assumed the shape of a lion and slipped out of the noose. He lunged at the Devi, and she severed his head with her sharp-edged sword. But in an instant, the evil Mahishasura reappeared as a man with sword and shield. Before he could move against her, she cut him to shreds with a volley of arrows. Then, taking the form of an elephant, huge and menacing, he grasped the noble lion with his trunk and he dragged it along the ground, the lion, trumpeting wildly. Now, in a flash, Durga's shining sword descended and severed his trunk. Once more, Mahishasura took his buffalo form and caused the three worlds to tremble. Durga, angered, drank a divine potion that distilled pure rajas, and her eyes reddened. Her wild hair blew over her face, and her expression grew frightful. She leaped upon the buffalo demon and pinned his neck underfoot and pierced him with her spear. Trapped and crushed by her might, Mahishasura transformed his buffalo form halfway into his human form, his true form. Thus exposed in fighting, he fell to Devi Durga, beheaded by her great sword. Screaming and crying, the remaining demons ran away, and all the gods became joyous. With satisfaction, the shining gods joined the divine great sage and sang praises of the divine goddess. So, what we're dealing with this section is the rajasic ego. Here, it's that which drives us with passion, lust, and greed, and material pleasure. And what does it require to defeat it? A fiery form of the Divine Mother. One who can combat our worldly rajas with divine rajas. So let's go through this now. There are three central characters in this story. First, there's Indra. Indra is that which is sort of the god of the controller of the natural forces in the universe. Within us, Indra represents our healthy ego. Indra is controller of the indriyas, our senses. And our senses are usually governed by the devas. Devas means to illumine. So our senses are illumining the world around us, giving us knowledge, feeding into our healthy ego. And everything is running smoothly. This is Indra. But then what happens? There are times within us when we feel tired or we feel we're getting tamasic and we start talking a little more about politics, we start gossiping, we start watching more things on the internet and TV that we shouldn't be watching. We start filling ourselves with these negative samskaras. The asuras are starting to build up in force within us. And when they come to a turning point where they outnumber the good forces within us, then Mahishasura takes over us. Our selfish, rajasic, egotistical, competitive, aggressive, narcissistic, instinctual ego. And what is Mahishasura obsessed with? Power, pleasure, and greed. And when we are in that mindset, when our ego is controlled by these forces, Mahishasura also has six generals that fight for him. These generals, you can see Udgra, Karal, Mahanu, Udata, Tamara, Urga, Virya. They represent the six afflictions that subdue our rajasic nature. In Sri Ramakrishna is referred to them as the six crocodiles. Okay? What are they? They're the six passions that afflict human wares: lust, anger, greed, pride, jealousy, and delusion. Lust, longing for gratification because we're lacking something. We feel we are incomplete. Behind any big ego, there's someone that feels very incomplete. There's someone that's been hurt, some pain, and then they're compensating with their huge, tremendous ego. So it's our incompleteness that is causing the ego. Ego is another term for grahitri. It is that which is grasping. We feel incomplete because of primordial ignorance, whatever, because of the traumas we experience within our life. We feel we're lacking something. And we're constantly going out to grab something to fill us. And I've given this example before. What happens when we get something and we grab something and it fills us? What happens? Again, it lasts for a moment, but then we again feel incomplete. It's the reason why an economics professor, I've told this a couple times, but I like this. It's like anything you do, do you remember the analogy I told about an economics professor? He gave a graph where he said everything has a diminishing sense of return. He said, he used the example of beer. You take your first can of beer, you feel really good. The second can of beer, not as good as the first, but still good. Third can of beer, not as good as the second, but still good. Fourth can of beer, optimal buzz. Fifth can of beer, you start to get nauseous. Sixth can of beer, you start to vomit. Seventh can of beer, you pass out. Everything has a diminishing sense of return to fill the lacking that we feel here. So we're turning to things, whether it's relationships, whether it's food, whether it's music, whatever it is, to fill the void in our hearts. But every time we grab it and put it, it's like quicksand. It comes in and then it goes out of our pockets. It's like we have pockets with holes. And that's why Apple, every 2 years, will develop a new Apple phone. Because they know you'll get tired of that phone after 2 years and you want to buy something else. So, lust. And then when we fail to satisfy those desires, anger. And when we satisfy them, greed, because the desires, we want more, we want different, we want better. And afterwards, then we also develop a sense of pride, a false sense of superiority. Jealousy is resentment to someone else's better condition. All of this creates what we call moha, delusion. We cannot see what's, we lose sight of what's really happening. This is what's happening in our Mahishasura nature. Now, how did Mahishasura become so powerful, the demon here? Well, he did austerities and was granted a boon by Brahma. He wanted to become immortal, but Brahma told him anything born has to die. So what did he say? He said, well, let me try to think of a way I can be immortal. Let me not be killed by any man or any god. He thought, if I do that, I'm immortal. When does Mahishasura become manifest in us? Under what conditions do we find that Mahishasura ego rising within us? You'll notice when you're rejected or criticized, that anger starts to arise within you, that Mahishasura. When you're not being loved, Mahishasura starts to rise within you. When you lose your image, lose face in front of others, he starts to rise. Basically, when you're not receiving attention, appreciation, acceptance, or affection, you'll find that Mahishasura starts to become prominent within you. And what does Mahishasura want? What does he want out of all this? Power, yes. But fundamentally, you know what he wants? He wants to be right. He wants to be understood. And he wants to be respected. What are his qualities that express Mahishasura within us? When you feel the quality of competitiveness, Mahishasura is there. When you feel the quality of arrogance, Mahishasura is there. Selfishness, when you feel power hungry. And when you have Mahishasura within you, how do you speak? You end up speaking harshly, cynically. You speak uncontrollably without allowing someone else to get a word in. That's Mahishasura. You also become argumentative. My way is the right way. Mahishasura. What I'm saying is, all of these things, these tamas, sattva, rajas, all these qualities are inherent within us. The idea is start to recognize these qualities. Because why? One of the things I discovered within this 3-month process is when you can identify that quality within you, it starts to, you can overcome it. How? I was saying that when someone cuts me off and then irritation starts to occur within me, I notice that's irritation in the form of Mahishasura. What do? Offer Mahishasura to the Divine Mother. Okay? Om Durum Dugyai Namaha. I offer this to you. Okay? What happens? Two things happen. The goddess is well fed. Okay? And she removes that quality within you. The more you keep identifying when you're in the weight room and you're finding yourself like, oh, I don't want to do anymore. That's Madhu and Kaitaba expressing that tamasic quality. It's okay. You don't have to work out. Everything is good. No. That's Madhu and Kaitaba. Om Dum Dugyai Namah. I offer Madhu and Kaitaba to you. Let that will, let the Divine Mother resurrect her power within me. Start to feel Mother's presence. What we're doing is you're trying to, all of this applies to all of us. As long as you have a body, you fit within one of these conditions, or all of these conditions. So what starts to happen? So now the gods have taken over, the asuras have taken over, and Mahishasura is in control. The asuras are now feeding the senses with the things that Mahishasura likes. So he wants power. He starts to see the world in terms of power, in terms of greed. That's what he's devouring. And all the senses are feeding him that. Now, the gods become homeless. So they go to Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu. Brahma represents the power of introspection. Shiva represents the power of jnana, knowledge. And Vishnu represents the power of surrender. So when we get to the point where we start to awaken, and we start to say to Brahma, we start to introspect, what I'm doing is not right. And then we go to Shiva, get me some knowledge, I need to know what to do. Ultimately, we surrender to Vishnu, help me, help me. When all of our powers, all of our forces come together, what happens? The divine grace starts to awaken and fills the heart with an unknown hope and confidence. The power of all the gods and goddesses come together. The fragmented consciousness within us becomes singular. All love, faith in goodness, inner capabilities, all that's great and noble within you get linked to each other. And the unified power, strength, and confidence begins to manifest in the form of the Divine Mother within you to conquer your inner enemies. This is the Divine Mother awakening within you. So who is Durga? Oh. Durga is Durgati Harini, the one who removes misery. Dur means difficult. Ga means go. The one you go with when the difficulty arises. She is Durga. And what will happen then? You see. So what happens? Remember now. When she awakens, what happens? We saw her feet touch the ground. Her crown scrape the sky. This is the awakening of the Kundalini. From the Muladhara Chakra to the Sahasrara Chakra. The awakening that happens within us. And so then, what is Mahishasura? He sees this Mother Durga. And how does he feel? All of a sudden he feels that his power, his enjoyments, his position is threatened. So what happens when our selfish ego starts to feel threatened? We go into fight and flight mode. Okay? Our rational minds turns off and our amygdala, our primitive instincts turn on. We no longer analyze. We just react. We don't think. We don't respond. This is what's happening within us. So, then the next part is, I'm just going to go through this fairly quickly, is that we see Mahishasura, when faced with the ego, metamorphizes in many different ways. What is this? This is our ego, the mask of the ego, that disguises itself. And the ego has what's called the psychological defense mechanisms. Right? If I tell you, if I tell you you're wrong, or if I say something that threatens your ego, you will have all these defense mechanisms. No, it's not my fault, so I mean it's his fault. All right? You're wrong. You'll tell me I'm wrong. The ego has all these mechanisms. And what the Divine Mother is unpeeling each of these mechanisms to get to where? To get to the root of the problem. Until we get to the root, the ego is going to metamorphize in all these different ways. So let's just go quickly. What are some of these ways here? So, takes the form of a buffalo. A buffalo is that brute force within us, the anger, the denial. When the guru confronts us with the truth, when someone confronts us with the truth, we become angry, we deny. And what is mother's weapon? The noose. She wants to tie down the ego. She wants to subdue the ego. And you'll see through, and that's, you'll see the column through japa prayer. Then what happens? Our Mahishasura changes into another form, changes into the lion. What is the lion symbolic of? Dharma. Okay? The lion symbolic of Dharma. But here in Mahishasura, it's false Dharma. So we project a false case. No, it's really not my fault. I was really doing something good. To cover up our selfishness, we make it sound we're doing something for somebody else, maybe. We have different ways of covering this up. So through false dharma, we are giving excuses, and what does the mother do? With her sword, she cuts through that BS. All right? All those phony excuses. Then Mahishasura takes the form of a man. He starts to get more, his defense mechanism starts to get more intricate. The man has the buddhi power, the inner capability of more thought, and also a sword and a shield. Through this shield, he defends himself, and through the sword, he points at other people. He blames others. It's not me, it's them. And so the Divine Mother takes arrows. Arrows in Indian mythology represents thoughts. So through higher thoughts, we call to tapas, swadhyaya, Ishvara Pranidhana, it says there, we dry up those Mahishasura side. We cut through. And then what happens? Mahishasura takes the form of an elephant. Why an elephant? Well, an elephant means royalty. But at this point, we start to understand that I can't defeat this person. So what am I going to do? I'm going to attack something that he or she loves. And it's called displacement. So what does Mahishasura do? Instead of attacking Durga, he attacks her lion. And he grabs the lion with his trunk. And then he drags the lion. Lion represents Dharma. He starts trash-talking the Divine Mother, her Dharma. You think you're so good? You don't know anything. And what he starts trumpeting himself with his trunk. I am the person. Do you know who I am? So through that, what does the Divine Mother do? She takes a sword and cuts the not self from self. She, using higher discrimination, she cuts through that trunk. And then Mahishasura takes the form of a buffalo. So this one Westerner asked me, why did he was a buffalo? Why did he take a buffalo again? And that was a good question. I didn't know it. So after some research, what happens ultimately when we can't defeat the person? We go, it's called, it's like regression. We go back to our more childlike behavior. When we can't attack the person, I've seen this in my life, in my eyes, where, for example, Swami Swahananda, a big guru there, I saw one of our nuns got very angry. And when she, and so you can't attack your guru, I mean, a very holy person, what does she do? She ends up stomping off like a little girl and closes the door and the whole place shatters. We go back to our childish self. A tantrum. What are the qualities? And then through pragya, mother takes her spear and cuts the buffalo until what? Until we get to the demon's original form. The root of the problem. And in this photograph, you see, Mother Durga takes her left foot and puts it on Mahishasura's neck. At this point, there's no more changing. She's pinned down the problem. And at that point, what happens? Mahishasura, realizing there's nowhere to go, nothing to do, at that point, let's go. And in the act of recognition, he sees, you am I, and I am you, and surrenders. And then the Divine Mother takes her spear and cuts him, cuts his head, and he merges into that. That is the Divine Mother. That is killing our rajasic ego, which is really, really difficult to kill. So, we're not over yet, okay? We've reached the stage of going past our tamas, of transcending our rajas, but we still have sattva to go through. Sattva, which has been something that is a revealing light, which illumines us, now becomes an obstacle in our pathway to spiritual realization. Let me ask you a question here. What is it? What's an obstacle of sattva? Why do you think sattva can be a problem? What are some of the pitfalls of sattva that develop? Anybody?
Samskaras.
But what are some of the qualities that start to... Samskaras are everywhere. What are some of the qualities as you become more sattvic that may be considered... preventative qualities from reaching the ultimate. Okay, and before we go on, let me go on one thing. I just want to remember one thing. Okay, and so let me add just one thing. After the Mahishasura is killed, then the gods praise the Devi, and then the Devi makes this one boon. The gods ask, "Oh Devi, whenever we think of you again, please destroy our direct calamities. And whatever human shall praise you with these humans, may you also be gracious to them and bless them to be fortunate. The Devi said, be it so. So this was a boon that the Devi said. Whenever in time of calamities, if you think of me, she will cut those problems. Okay? This happened. Okay? And then, this leads to the third story. The third story is about now the third of Sattva. And just to be clear, we talked about Tamas, we talked about Rajas. Now what happens? When the mind, when the ego becomes more and more pure, it starts to reflect the light of the Brahman. Okay? What starts to happen when that occurs? You start to gain insight. Your intellect starts to become more powerful. And you start to have refined and subtle enjoyments. It could be like classical music, beautiful art. Your mind is of a higher nature. And you also may develop psychic abilities. So, again, what then will start to manifest as obstacles within you?
Complacency.
Complacency, yes. You can start to sing that you've made it, right?
Yes.
Why? Because now in your meditations, you're enjoying great bliss. You're experiencing tremendous bliss. And you're like, I don't need to go on. I want to stay here. Another thing that may happen, you also start to develop a subtle knowledge. And you may think that you know everything, that you are omniscient. Pride is starting to develop more and more.
Can we say holier than thou?
Yes, that's that spiritual pride. I'm holier than thou. I start to get pride in my own sadhana. Look, I'm doing all this. Look at everybody else. They can't do anything. What, out of all of this, what starts to happen? Our ego starts to swell up. We think, I am enlightened. I am done. I know everything. Why, as a result, what happens? Humility disappears. And what was once reflecting the light of consciousness, when the ego starts to form, then that feeling of grace starts to disappear. Pride, arrogance, conceit develop, but of a higher nature, spiritual pride, spiritual arrogance, spiritual conceit. Anytime you think, I'm such a charitable person, I'm such an honest person, I'm truthful. Look, no one's more truthful than me. So these start to come within you. And the result is now, then, so when these happen, now let's go to the story. This is Shumbha and Nishumbha. Shumbha and Nishumbha are the two main characters within the third story. Shumbha literally means I. Nishumbha means mine. I and mine. These two go together. They're two brothers. We'll talk about them a little bit more. I and mine. Your subtle ego. The very essence of your individuality that arises before all the identifications take place. That's your subtle ego. The ego is known as ahamkara. Ahamkara. Aham is I. Kara is maker. That which takes the infinite and makes it finite. We're talking about the subtle sense of your I-ness. So what happens now? Let me read a little bit of the story here. So what happens here then is that the gods start to see that this pride develops within us. And because of this pride, all of a sudden you start to feel conceit, as arrogance. So we know this. But we can't do anything about this. Something awakens within us. The devas who've now been ousted of the three worlds because of Shumbha and Nishumbha, who've taken over now. So the gods now say, we remember this boon that Mother had said. In times of calamity, she'll come. So what do? We're going to chant this prayer to awaken the Divine Mother. That's sattvic aspect in the Mother. How? We're going to recognize her in all her various forms, in all the various ways she manifests. We're going to recognize her in these ways, and in that, we're going to awaken the Mother within us. So together, let's chant these prayers. It's the prayer of Ya Devi. So together, let's chant a few of these prayers to awaken the sattvic divine mother within us, okay? So, if you look on the screen, and the meaning is there. Oh, so this is something again. Spiritual knowledge develops, the pride in oneself, sense of bliss, comfort and complacency. I am done. I know everything. I am everything. This is the spiritual plan. The sattva, the obstacles of sattva that arises. Okay, so together. Ya devi sarva bhuteshu Vishnu mayeti shaktita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu Cheta nitya vidiyate namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu buddhi rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu nitra rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu shuddha rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu chaya rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu shakti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu trisha rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu shanti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu jati rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu lajja rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu shanti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu shraddha rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu kanti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu lakshmi rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu vritti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu smriti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Ya devi sarva bhuteshu daya rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha Namastasyai, 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 namo namaha. So what happens? The gods are in the mountain in the Himalayas chanting this to awaken the divine mothers because they've been ousted by Shumba and Nishumba. So when this is happening, Divine Mother Parvati comes into the picture and she asks, who are they praising? And out of her, Kaushiki, this beautiful form of the Divine Mother, such radiance, such splendor, such beauty, arises and erects, breathtaking, comes out. Kaushiki means that which comes out of the koshas. And she, in all her majesty, flashes through. And then we see two asuras see her, Shumba and Nishumba. Chanda and Munda see this beautiful presence of the divine. And they tell Shumba and Nishumba, who are the ruler of the three worlds, our own ego, subtle ego. And they say, you must possess her. You who have possessed all the things of beauty, of refined art, music, beautiful pictures, you possess all the things worth possessing. You must possess her also. What does this mean? The awakening of that divine presence has come into picture. We've had this awakening of the Divine Mother who's awakened within us. And now our subtle ego, our egotistical causal ego, Shumba, the sense of I, mine, now we want to possess it. So we tell Sugriva, our messenger, Sugriva, one who is a good looking, has a good jaw, you go to the Divine Mother, Kaushiki, that brilliant, whose beauty is unsurpassable, and you make her fall in love with us, with your words. And he goes to the Divine Mother, and he tells her, my master, Shumba, ego, and Nishumba, the brother, the mamatwa, the I and mine, they are the rulers of the world. They have defeated the devas. They want you in hand for their marriage. And what does the mother say? The mother says, that's very nice, and they sound so great, but unfortunately, when I was a little girl, I made a promise to myself. What was that promise? The promise was that someone would have to defeat me to get my hand in marriage. Sugriva said, what? You're going then to allow, then you'll be defeated and crushed by them. Don't be a haughty little girl. Marry them. Says, do you know who they are? And what can I do? I made this promise when I was very young. What do we see here? First, Shumba and Nishumba want to marry the Divine Mother compared to our sattvic ego, compared to our rajasic ego or tamasic ego. Our rajasic ego wanted to kill the Divine Mother because he felt inferior. But now, because our ego is at that almost the highest level, the sense where we feel that the qualities of Brahman, we think we're equivalent to Brahman. So now we feel as equivalent, we want to marry her. We want to possess her. So Sugriva now, is through his words, is trying to come and possess the Divine Mother. Can we grasp the divine through words? Yes or no?
No.
No. Because we cannot grasp with our senses that which is beyond the senses. So what does Mother say? Mother says, only that who can defeat me. What does Mother want? She's instigating a battle. Why is she instigating a battle?
She wants to defeat
them. What does she want? Right, but she wants nothing less than a sacrifice. A sacrifice of the ego to experience your divine self. The ego has to be killed in order for you to experience your own divinity. So nothing less than a sacrifice will do. That's why she wants a battle. Are we willing to sacrifice our own ego to experience the higher divine self? This is what Sugriva's after. So anyways, Sugriva goes back. And now he tells Shumba and Nishumba. And these two brothers are now angry. And so, instead of getting her by sweet words, they send their messenger. They send the warrior Dhumralochana, smoky eyed, literally means distorted perception, to do what? To get the mother and drag her by force, grab her by the hair if necessary, and bring her by force. And with distorted perception, he goes there. He doesn't recognize who the Divine Mother is. And so he tries to possess the Divine Mother. How? By trying to pull the spiritual into the material. We want to bring down the ideal as another feather into our hat. It is, instead of going to the divine, we want to bring the divine down to us by saying, look, I'm spiritual, I'm vegetarian, I do yoga, I listen to Oprah. See, look how spiritual I am. We want to bring the ideal to us. And so, what does the Divine Mother do? The Divine Mother, with one mere humkara, disintegrates Dhumralochana. Then, the Divine Mother's, then our ego is furious. And so, Shumbha says to the next warriors, Chanda and Munda, bring back the Divine Mother at whatever cost, in whatever way. Bind her and bring her back. Chanda and Munda now is really, now imagine, we've surpassed Tamas, now we're in the inner, our inner consciousness, at the highest levels of meditation now. So now at the higher levels of meditation, Chanda and Munda, Chanda means passionate, move, pravritti, movement towards. Munda is, we think of as a head, a shaved head. It means renunciation, movement away, withdrawal. Okay. These are the two movements within the mind. Movement towards, pavritri, and movement away. From what? From anything external. Any external stimuli. We like something, we don't like something. We move towards something, raga. We move away from something, dvesha. This movement is going on. And so, what does the mother do? The mother sends her warrior, Kali, to kill Chanda and Munda. And she chops off their heads. Then what happens? Kali, an aspect of the Divine Mother, comes to the Divine Mother now and says, in this sacrifice, holding with both hands her, the two heads of Chanda and Munda, and in some interpretations say Chanda means anger and lust, holding these two, the two demons in her heads, in this sacrifice of battle, here I have brought you the heads of Chanda and Munda, the great beast. Shumbha and Nishumbha, you yourself shall have to slay. What does this mean? At this point, she's saying that now all self-effort, I've done everything I can at this point. You have to take care of the rest. From this point on, our self-effort will not work. Now it is the grace of the Divine Mother that will kill the last remnants of the subtle ego before we merge into the infinite. Okay. So the next demons now that come into play is the Raktabija. Raktabija is he whose seed is blood. And what Raktabija has is this special quality. Every time you pierce him, every time you cut him, any blood that comes out spills onto the ground. Out of that drop of blood emerges another Raktabija of the same power, the same form. So what starts to happen in the battle between the Divine Mother and Raktabija? Every time she pierces him, cuts him, slices him, more and more blood comes out and more Raktabijas are forming. Until eventually the whole world is filled with Raktabijas. What does this mean for us? Well, we killed off the outer and inner movements of the mind towards external stimuli. But within the mind, it has its own internal movements. Those movements are the thoughts that are always coming up within us. The thoughts, when you ever try to meditate, when you're focusing, what happens? Your thoughts will go into a different direction. And you'll be off in something for 5 minutes. Again, you meditate. again, Rakta Bij will come in another form and take you off in another stream of thoughts. Constantly. You cannot stop them. So what happens? We can't do this by our own power. So what happens? Then, as the fight is going and the world's filled with all these Rakta Bijas, with all these thoughts, the Divine Mother tells Mother Kali, okay, open up your mouth and suck all the blood. Drink all the blood that's coming out from Rakta Bija. So the Divine, so as Mother Kali, she drinks up all the blood until Rakta Bija dies for a lack of blood. For us, what it means at this point, all these thoughts that are happening within us, surrender to the Divine Mother. Let her consume your thoughts. Let her swallow your thoughts. Let her eat your thoughts away. When that happens, ultimately you're left with two brothers. Shumbha, referred to as the ego, Asmita, and Nishumbha, the brother, the sense of myness, the sense of clingness, called mamatva, I and mine, I-ness and mine-ness. Whenever you have I, me, there's going to be a mine. Anybody attacks my family, they're attacking me. Anybody attacks me, they're attacking my family. And these two brothers fight together. So in the last battle, the Divine Mother is killing one, punching one, and then the other comes and punching the other. When one fights, the other's fighting. Both are going hand in hand. Until finally, Nishumbha gets one blow that knocks him out. When one falls unconscious, the other comes to fight. Nishumbha finally gets one blow, and he falls, and then he's about to die. But in his last attempt, what happens? Nishumbha sprouts 10,000 arms. He says, you know, do you know who you're attacking? These 10,000 arms represent the 10,000 identifications. One last attempt of survival. So all of the things that we cling to, all the ideas, all of us that makes us, spring out. And then the Divine Mother says, one last blow kills Nishumbha. And all that is left now is I, Shumbha. And seeing then, Shumbha, what does Shumbha say to the Divine Mother? Because the Divine Mother is there with all her shaktis, all her manifestations of herself. And Shumbha says, hey, Divine Mother, do not show your pride to me, for though you are flushed with victory, you have fought depending on the strength of others. He has nothing else to lose. He's now in his final stage, the I. We're going to do whatever it takes for victory. You think you're fighting with all the help of the others. And then what does the Divine Mother say? This is what makes this text an Advaitic text. The Devi replies, I am alone here in this world. Who else is there besides me? Look at all these. Kali, my shaktis, are but projections of my own power. Behold them now, entering back into me. I have withdrawn the many forms and now stand alone in my own power and glory. I warn you, be resolute in battle. So ultimately, what's now what exists? The I and the Divine Mother alone. So what does the I try to do? It can't defeat the Divine. It grabs the Divine Mother and jumps in the air, wrestling the Divine Mother. It's rising higher and higher. This represents going from the very subtle essence almost to the threshold between duality and non-duality meet. There's a sense of bhava mukha, that which separates the non-dual becoming the dual. Going high in the levels of ajnana, of the primal ignorance they're rising to. Until the Divine Mother finally takes Shumbha and throws him down to the earth. And then, with one final spear, destroys Shumbha. And the ego dissipates. And what alone, what remains? That alone remains. This is the journey of our spiritual life. So, what I'd like to do to end this off with is I actually had made a little video, just a very quick one, of the Divine Mother of the Mahishasura battle. Okay, because that's where most of us fit into. And because, again, of my Western culture, I've used three stongs. You know, to me, what singer represents the embodiment of Mahishasura? Do you guys know a person named Freddie Mercury from Queen? Okay, he was actually Indian. But he's been considered by some as one of the greatest rock and roll singers. And he has a song called Bohemian Rhapsody. And if it's a 7.5 minutes long, it's a brilliant piece of work. Again, this is Indians. We all have different flavors. So here's the Western side of me coming here. Okay. So what you're going to see, let me just explain a little bit, is the beginning of the song starts. Is this a real? Is this the real thing? Is it a real? I forget exactly. Questioning life. Okay. And then what happens is our asuric tendencies come into place. When our asuric tendencies come, how does it manifest in us? And then the awakening, done by Eric Clapton, who sings a song on Holy Mother. Then, after the awakening, we have battle. The battle between Mother Durga, the higher self, and the lower self. The deity within us against the asuras within us. Okay? So that's what's being depicted here. Turn the lever.
No escape from reality.
Now the Asura is starting to overcome us. The result of our demonic tendencies is this. Can you see, Brother Shankara? Do you want to allow him to sit here? Brother Sean, come here. Okay. Our rajasic ego coming into play. But everything positive must have a down. Turning to the Divine Mother and then an awakening.
Holy Mother and King from crime. Oh, I need no help this time.
Now the awakening occurring, Mother resurrecting, and now the struggle and battle. Durga against Mahishasura. This is Mahishasura speaking.
Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, 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 Figaro.
She sees the presence of the Divine Mother. Now he's making excuses. Asking Mother, let me go. Let me go. I will not let you go.
We will not let you go. We will not let you go. We will not let you go.
Mamma mia, mamma mia, the Divine Mother prevails. Now the battle now. Higher nature against lower nature. divine self for himself. And the ego finally saying nothing matters and surrendering. And the final cut.
Have that short video.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. I forgot. Thank you. It's the next one. So.
There's something a little extra here.
I have something, 3 minutes.
For those of you who know and love Swami Yogeshananda, this will be very
important. Yes. Swami Yogeshananda, who founded this center, turned 95 last Sunday. So I was in Tribhuvan, and 96. So they had a big birthday party. In that birthday party, Swami gave sort of like just a message for the Tribhuvan crowd. And when I was there, I had a chance to meet him. He had told me he probably will not live to see another year. Okay, one of his eyes is gone, the other eye is fading, his hearing is going. I asked him, "Can you taste anything?" He said, "I can only taste chocolate. But with all of that, his mind is fully sharp. Okay? So this is the message that he gave during his birthday. It's only 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the last prayer of the that we didn't get to of the day there.
The Delta is a large department. You don't have to buy the whole thing. You go into the store, you find what you want, you buy that. And then it attracts you, and then you buy a little more. So my message to you this morning is, get engaged. Do some spiritual practice. Don't just come to lectures and listen to people with wisdom. The wisdom has to be in you. You have to take it home and practice it. It means practice. It means getting engaged in spiritual exercises under the direction of an expert. Find an expert in spiritual practice. We have one here. He's the head of the center. And he is the guru, what we call the guru, the teacher. And he has lots to offer. And you and I have to take advantage of that and get into business. Don't just come in and hear about Vedanta. It's something to be practiced. So, do some spiritual exercises. Do prayer. Do job one. Repetition in the name of the Lord. Do reading. Spiritual reading. Become engaged. That's my message to you. Become engaged. Everything that I am today, I owe to my two mentors, my guru and my yoga guru, both wonderful men, to whom I owe everything that I am. God bless you and enjoy some refreshments.
Thank you, Swami.
Watch.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Swami. Happy birthday to you. Woo!
96.
Make a wish, Swami, a wish.
Blow.
One more. The six.
You can't see
it. All right. Yeah. Swami, you have to wear that crown. Thank you, guys.
And I think I have one more. 1 30-second clip. I asked him, Swami, what would you like to tell the devotees of Atlanta? And this is what he said. I think it's here. Oh, hold on. Oh, then it wasn't. He just basically said that he hopes the center keeps flourishing and basically to continue what you're doing. So in essence. So the important thing, what he was saying here, and it's very important, he says it's not enough just to come to the lectures, to just come and enjoy the company, but also the way this is going to work for you is if you practice. Practice. And then he said, be engaged. So whatever your practices are, prayer, meditation, japa, do something. Even when it comes to the chandi, it's not enough just to understand the stories, what we did. The most important thing is to actually chant it. Because in the chanting of it, there is a power that starts to arise within you. You start to awaken those aspects of the Divine Mother within you to face the struggles in life. And what do you find? When you face one struggle and defeat it, Mother will give you another struggle. And another, for the purpose of one's own growth. Ultimately, what's she doing? She wants you to bring you back to where you belong. Back into her lap, so she can hold you tightly, grab you, and immerse you back into her own self, which is yourself. Thank you.
Thank you.